right. This is the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO.FM. Let's see, that's 90.7. I'm here with two folks who are great union activists and on the cusp of some hopefully good wins. I've got Joshua Holt, who is the vice chair for the Oregon Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals. He's a critical care nurse for Kaiser Westside Medical and active in his union and is going to fill us in on what's going on with Kaiser. We also have Bill Bevel, who's a fifth grade public school teacher and the president of Evergreen Education Association. Folks might have heard that there is a strike pending and school starts tomorrow. So it's school days and healthcare never ends. So we're hoping to get filled in here this morning on what you both are doing and what you're up to. And we also will like to talk about the importance of union solidarity and activism post-Janus this morning. So Bill, why don't you start? You're sort of you all are on the hot seat right now. You're bargaining, you're trying to get something worked out before the school year starts tomorrow. Tell us who Evergreen Education Association is, what preceded this, and where are we right now?
Evergreen Education Association represents our 1,800 members. We're affiliated with the state-level Washington Education Association and the NEA. We are looking towards getting in a settlement. Our bargaining team has been at the table since, well, we actually organized in May, and we've been ready to get a deal done ever since there were new money sent down from the state. There was a lawsuit concluded and many years ago, and it actually took the state legislature many years to actually find the funding to fulfill the lawsuit, and they actually put in over $2 billion in education starting in this year. And we wanted to meet with the district and come to an agreement on how that money would come through. The district did not see anything different. They wanted to keep going as usual, and they were ignoring the new money. And we had to bring them to the table to talk to them.
It sounds like they probably spent it in their heads 50 times over, because they offered you 1.9%, which you can barely even sneeze at that.
Yeah, I mean, it really is a nothing offer. That the reason they came up with 1.9% is at the inflation rate. So they really were just saying, we're going to pay you. We're going to pay you last year, just moved up for inflation.
And the contract negotiations, I mean, as you said, they delayed and delayed. And coming to the table in June when school starts August 28th seems like a much delayed tactic.
Oh, it's way worse than that. Not only did they not come ready to bargain in June, they did not send anyone to the table that had authority to bargain. We got the first offer of the summer not until August 15th. Ooh. And that was the very first offer. It's the offer that we started this actual bargain this week with mediation. The mediator, the state mediator, is working with us, and we're hopefully going to make some progress.
So let's just talk about what the next steps are with teachers in Evergreen district. Now, Evergreen is the district,
and
the association was created to support teachers in that district.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
And so I believe there's a meeting actually tonight. You're not clear what that is or why it's happening, you know, but is it something that you can draw public out, or teachers, students, family members?
Yeah, I mean, this is a public meeting. They had to announce it because it is a public meeting. It's called a special meeting. I don't know what's special about it. We had a regular school board meeting scheduled for tomorrow night. I don't know, honestly, what the content of that meeting is. I'm sure it's not anything good. But our teachers have been really resolute. It's like we're not starting school without a deal. No teacher in our organization knows what they get paid September 1st. No one knows that. And until we get to an agreement on that, it's really hard for us to move on.
Right, right. And where does other education staff fit into this picture? Is there something also on the table for general staff, administrative, food service, and other folks?
That's a great question. They've already negotiated. They've already come to a contract agreement. I don't like to give my opinions about what other deals are, but I think that they've been very frugal with that. Those people are those members of their organizations as well. The district has been very staunch in their belief that there isn't a lot of new money coming down, and they've been pushing back at every one of their employees.
All right. Let's shift over to nurses, Joshua Holt. Kaiser is looking at a contract ending September 30, I think you said. The contract is up.
That's right.
So you're negotiating and working towards that currently. Fill us in on what's going on with Kaiser.
Sure. Well, first of all, my name is Joshua Holt. I am the vice chair, as you said, of the nurses at the Oregon Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals. We represent about 6,000 healthcare workers in Southwest Washington, from Longview all the way down to Eugene in Oregon. And about 4,500 of those are at Kaiser. The rest of them are at Peace Health. So at Kaiser, we are in the process of bargaining for our 4,500 members, including 2,000 nurses and professionals, from dental hygienists to lab techs, respiratory therapists and physical therapists, nurse practitioners, et cetera, mental health therapists. We are in the process of trying to secure an agreement that improves our staffing. That is our number one issue. So for us, we believe that the staff have not been fully integrated into the conversations regarding how best to take care of our patients as it relates to staffing. And we are working on an agreement that will secure our voice in being able to protect our patients in the way that is needed. Also, we are working to protect the groundbreaking income security that we have that recruits and retains the best workers in our health system. For the last over 15 years, we had an agreement that for our inpatient nurses, which we represent healthcare workers both in and outpatient, but for our workers in the hospital, that if the employer offers you a shift and you agree to take it, that you get to keep that shift no matter what happens as it relates to how many patients are in the hospital. That is something that almost nobody else has, and it really does a lot to protect the ability of our employees, our members, to provide food for their tables and protect our communities.
This is a really interesting piece, because essentially it's almost like a buy-in. This is your shift,
right?
And even in my workplace, I have a shift and I have lots of flexibility, and that's great. But the flip side of that, and as a Teamster, but the flip side of that is, for most folks, and particularly if we talk about retail, shift. Your shift is shifting.
Shift work.
Yeah, it's
right.
Always moving.
That's
it's
right.
A moving target. And so it is really, I mean, it shouldn't be underestimated how important that is to have that guarantee.
It's vitally important. Yeah. In fact, Kaiser is not where I used to practice. I used to come from I came from the Midwest. I worked in a hospital where, thanks to some events that happened with administration in the hospital, patients didn't come to my hospital. And I was a full-time worker, and I would sometimes get one, maybe two shifts a week. We had people who were not able to pay their mortgages, even though they were full-time workers. And this is a standard across healthcare that we have been able to protect against here. And it's something that is very important to us.
Right. So let's move into this territory. I think there are some obvious reasons why nurses and teachers and health professionals and administrators in public schools have an overlapping concerns. Obviously, staffing is one of them, and protecting one's income, retirement benefits, et cetera. But that also provides a greater ability to organize and build worker solidarity in a time where we just have seen the Supreme Court land a blow with the Janus decision. So I'm not sure who wants to kind of take that up, but Bill, you mentioned in our pre-discussion the fact that these two areas are heavily female workers, and that's one way to create income equality. But let's talk about, you know, how we can build the unions post-Janus.
Well, as I was listening to Josh, it was amazing how many things corresponded. One of the things that we're facing now is we're in a complete teacher crisis. Teachers are not joining, they're not taking higher level learning classes that are in education programs, because they're looking forward and they're realizing that the rising cost of tuition, it just is difficult to make that investment. If you're coming out of college with 50, 60, 70 grand worth of student loans, you can't make an investment in starting a career that's not going to support you. And a lot of that affects women in our community, and it's part of our community. One thing I would like the district to understand is that we're a huge part of the commerce in our community. It's like everybody's one degree of separation from a teacher, and they know how hard they work, and they know all that they put in, or nurses and healthcare providers as well. They know what the stressors are and how difficult that is. And I saw an awful lot of overlap there as far as control. The professionals, the people that actually do the work, are the professionals. And the closer you get to those people being able to make the decisions, the better the overall quality gets for the entire system or institution.
I'd like to point out that improving the disparity between the genders is really important, but also our union contracts protect against racial discrimination as well and income security, right? And in merit-based systems, it is almost impossible to separate gender and race from the incentives that people get on annual increases, if they get them, or how people are paid.
Right, absolutely. The way that labor is spread across any particular workplace is very much clearly racially segregated, and I've seen that. Obviously, we've all seen that in any work that we've done.
Right.
So we have just 1 minute left to work with here. So any last thoughts about the post-Janus world and some perhaps successes that you've seen in the work you've been doing lately?
So I work in the private sector, and Janus hasn't directly impacted us as much as it has perhaps you, Bill, in the public sector. But I'm really excited actually about the opportunity that Janus has given us to re-engage our members and have those one-on-one conversations, create the reasons for members to be involved and engaged with our unions. And I think that we've seen, both with the nursing and teacher strikes throughout the country, that members are recommitting to their union, and that people are standing up to say that they're going to have a voice in their workplace.
Yeah, here I am shaking my head on radio, but I absolutely agree with everything you just said there. This is when it looked like something that'd be a detriment, it's actually been a great asset that we're out there, we're talking to our members, we are more engaged with our members than we've ever been before, and they see this as an opportunity to have their voice heard, and that's been something I've been sorely missing.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank you both for joining me.